Good morning. Lance Tarchione, technical agronomist with DeKalb Asgrow, here with you on WGIL Radio, AM 1400, with this week's episode of Ag Talk. Another big change in the weather coming. We were in the 50s earlier in the week and then dropped down into the single digits and now headed back up into the 50s with some precip, maybe some freezing rain this weekend before it turns over to rain, and sounds like several kind of wet, sloppy days here of another shot of warm weather and some moisture, and hopefully any ice that we get will be not awful, and sounds like it won't last long. But busy week for me this week at work. A lot of traveling, a lot of meetings. A very fun week for me at work. I got to do a lot of things this week that I enjoy doing. I like being in technical meetings where I can learn and share information with colleagues and see some people from other parts of the country that I don't get to see very often, and spend a little time with my colleagues, networking and fellowshipping and learning together and talking about things that are important in our business, like new products and that sort of stuff. So spent a couple days in Indianapolis, and then I was in Champaign this week as well, which was also fun. So we just concluded my fourth season of my YouTube Live agronomy program that I call Ask the Agronomist. And that was something that we started doing during the COVID lockdowns when we were not supposed to be having in-person meetings. And so we thought, well, we'll start doing, this YouTube Live. It's kind of a, social media, and they new ways for people to get and enjoy digesting information. And so decided to go every 2 weeks was the frequency of this program. And so just wrapped up our fourth season. And for the last three seasons, I've been very honored to have as my special guest on my season-ending episode, Dr. Fred Belo from the University of Illinois. And if you're at all involved in corn production, you probably know Dr. Belo. You've probably seen him. He's a very popular, very sought-after guest speaker at meetings, very, very entertaining, extremely knowledgeable, great, great guy. And I got to know Dr. Belo as a professor when I was a student in his class. So when I was in graduate school, I took his 400 level agronomy course, and that would have been in, I think, 1991, I believe, fall of 91 or 92. Can't recall which. And I really enjoyed him as a teacher. Some professors, especially at larger universities, aren't always the best teachers. They might be brilliant scientists. They might be great researchers. They might be leaders in their field. But not everybody can be a teacher. And Dr. Belo was a lot of fun as an instructor. He always kept it interesting. He kept it lively. He's a interesting personality, and he's always been he was a teacher, always been a mentor to me through my career, and actually a little bit of a hero to me. So it's an honor to me to have him on the program with me, and a lot of fun when we get to do that every year. So that was this week as well, and we'll be, I'm proud to say we're starting our fifth season of Ask the Agronomist in January. So we still haven't ran out of things to talk about when it comes to agronomy. So had a lot going on the farm this week as well. Been kind of an expensive stretch on the farm as far as breakdowns and repairs go. So we've got a tractor, which we use every day doing chores. One of our main chore tractors, our main loader tractor, that has a fuel problem that we need to get diagnosed probably needs a injection pump rebuilt, which is going to be a fairly significant repair. We had a grain bin auger that had some issues. The flighting was wore out, the tube was wore out, there were some bearings out of it, there was a U-joint out of it. It was just wore out. It had served its purpose. It was still the original equipment that was put in when the bins were installed in, I think, 1980-ish, when my dad put that grain setup up. And so it had served its life well and needed to be replaced. And unfortunately, we had to change some things because the parts required to put it back the way it was originally are not readily available anymore. So we had to change some things, and so haven't got the bill on that yet. But it won't be good. And then the latest thing, we've got an underground wiring issue on the farm, which is impacting some lighting in one of our cattle buildings, and also impacting the heating element in a drinker. And you need a heating element in your drinker to keep the drinkers from freezing when it's this cold. So that's going to have to be fixed. And a little life lesson, learning lesson for me there. If you've ever done any wiring projects, outside of your home, on a farmstead, you got two options, really, if you need to run wiring. You either go overhead and put them up on poles so that you can drive underneath them, or you bury them under the ground. And my dad was always a big fan of underground. Overhead stuff just gets in the way, has problems, just bury it underground, then it's out of your way, and it's all good. Well, that's great until something goes wrong, and then it's really hard to fix because it's buried underground. And if you're going to bury underground, you got two options on how to do that. You can buy wire that's designed to be buried directly in the ground, or you can buy conduit and run the wire through the conduit. Well, that's more expensive, and my dad had pretty good luck on the farm that I grew up on, with direct buried stuff not having issues. Now, my father-in-law, he had horrible luck with underground wiring, always caused all kinds of problems. So he gave up on underground, and he moved all his stuff above ground and went overhead with it. So most of the wiring that I've done on the farm that we've lived on for 25 years is direct wire buried underground. And just this year, we've had two of those fail. And when that fails, you have no option but to, trench a new line. And this time it's getting buried in conduit. So the next time that something goes wrong, you can pull the wire out and pull a new wire in. And plus, it's going to last a lot longer in conduit because it's not rubbing against rocks and other debris that might be underneath the soil, and it's just a lot less likely to fail. And had I spent the money to do it the right way the first time, we wouldn't need to redo it now. So one of those things where you try to save a buck, and in the end, it ends up costing you money. So maybe you've had experiences like that on projects that you've done. So been a lot going on this week. My dad was teasing me. He said it was just all these expensive things that we've had to fix. It's tax deductions for rich farmers is how he put it. And I don't know that this quote unquote rich farmer needs any more tax deductions this year or not, because I didn't do a great job marketing my grain, and my yields were not super fabulous, fantastic like some people's were. So I don't know if I need any more tax deductions, but I got to get my electricity going again. I got to get my tractor fixed, and we had to fix the bin. So whether I need the deductions or not, I have the expenses because all that stuff had to be fixed. When I come back from break, we'll talk about a little project that my son Cole is researching that is going to be expensive on a level that I have not ever experienced before. Ryan Starchione, technical agronomist with DeKalb Asgrow, back with you here on WJL Radio this morning with our second half of Ag Talk. And I mentioned before the break that my son Cole had a big project that he was researching. So he's always had a dream of building a big shop for his diesel repair business that he calls Tark's Diesel Service. And if you've ever built a shop or a building or a shed, you know it's challenging to build it big enough that down the road you don't regret that you didn't build it bigger. But, you know, anything is expensive, and the bigger you make it, the more expensive it gets. So he wants to make a 120-foot by 80-foot shed with big overhead doors, tall 20-foot eaves, so it's nice and big and tall doors. You can get, you know, the biggest combine that exists today and the biggest tractor trailer that exists today, and plenty of room to get stuff in and out. And right now he doesn't have a big building like that to operate out of. He works out of the farm shop that my dad built 40 years ago, which is, I think, a 24-by-40 building. It's insulated, cement floors, overhead door. It's a nice building, but it's not big enough to get a big combine in. You can get a semi-tractor truck in there, but you can't get a trailer in there, and you certainly can't get a semi and trailer hooked together in there. So he's got a lot of work that he does that he doesn't have a way to get it indoors. He's also got an oversized three-car garage that came with his house that's nice for, you know, working on pickup trucks and that kind of stuff, but you're not going to get tractors and big stuff in there either. So he's got two places to work out of, but he has to turn down some work because he doesn't have room to take on some bigger projects. And he's always had a dream of having a big shop, and he's going to build one someday. And he has decided that now might be the time. So he's been researching options on, you know, what brands, what companies, you know, what contractors, who he's going to work with, and it's been been kind of a frustrating ordeal for him, and a lot more stressful than he was anticipating, and I've told him the most stressful part's going to be paying for the thing, so he hadn't even got to that part yet. But if to build what he wants, I mean, by the time you get the building, the cement, the electrical, the insulation, the heat, the lighting, all the, you know, all the stuff that it takes to have a nice shop, it's going to be, probably won't be $500,000, but it'll get damn close to that, I'm sure, by the time he gets it the way he wants it. So I don't know if that's a good idea for him to take on that much debt or not, but he's looking into it anyway. He's had a pretty stressful week this week. He had a little incident with the grain truck hauling grain into one of the elevators that we haul to, and I've often wondered exactly how this works, because when you pull up to a grain elevator, especially when they're busy, when there's a lot of trucks, and you know there's always a line, and some of these places the line is, you know, it's just one big long line, and when you come into the place, you take your place at the end of the line, and it's fairly simple. Others of them, it's kind of, there's trucks parked on the street, there's trucks parked on this street, there's trucks parked on that street, there's all these trucks waiting to get in line, and when you come in to that mess, you don't know how long other people have been there, you don't know who's in front of you, and some of these places, it's even hard to tell where the line is. And he was going to a place that he's gone to it before, but he's never been there when it was as busy as it was this time. And the way this one's set up, there's an area behind Hardee's in Havana where trucks wait to get in line, because the line going to this elevator would be blocking the street if they sat in line. So there's kind of this staging area where trucks gather to wait to get in line. Well, when he came into town, he didn't really know that there were several trucks waiting in this area, waiting to get in line. So he just turned left, coming off the bridge, going into Havana, and got in line. And, you know, it would have been a good opportunity at that time for those guys, because they watched him do it. And unbeknownst to him, they were pissed. And so for an hour and a half, while he's waiting to get dumped, nobody said a word. Nobody came on the radio and said, "Hey, punk, what are you doing? You just cut in line in front of us." You know, nobody said a word. And when he's setting at the getting ready to dump at the pit, and by this time he couldn't get out of there if he wanted to without dumping. So he's far enough into the facility. The only way out is to unload. And all of a sudden there's a guy outside of the truck door, rips his door open and just starts screaming at him for cutting in line, cussing, cursing, carrying on. Cole's trying to apologize, trying to talk to the guy. The guy's just getting madder and madder and madder and just screaming at him. And, you know, if you know anything about truckers, there's, for some reason, a lot of guys, my brother's this way, Cole's this way, they like to ride with their seat down as low as it would go. So when you're looking at him in the cab, I mean, his head's not very far above the steering wheel. And so when he decided that he was going to have to get out of the truck and confront this guy and have it out with him, I don't think the guy realized that he was screaming at a 6'2", 270-pound dude. And when he came down out of the truck, the other guy's attitude did improve relatively significantly, relatively quickly, but he was still upset. He was still irate. You know, they got into it. I don't know that any blows were exchanged, but I think there was some pushing and shoving, and finally the guy backed down and went away. But both of them actually got asked not to come back to the elevator that day because they didn't want that kind of activity going on. And Cole is he's a very very strong, very independent, very confident, very aggressive. I'm a lot more timid than he is. I would tend to you know, be submissive in a situation like that. I want to de-escalate things. I don't want to make trouble. I want to get somebody calmed down. He's not going to do that. If you push him, he's going to push you back. And if you push him again, he's going to push you really hard. And he's definitely not going to get pushed around. And he is not timid at all. He's a lot tougher than me. Gets that from his mom. She's a lot tougher than me too. So anyway, he and this other guy kind of had a little deal over the fact that he was mad that Cole had cut in line, and Cole was mad that, you know, all those guys watched him do it. He didn't realize, you know, that he had done it. And if they would have called him on the CB and said, "Hey, you know, what are you doing? You just cut in front of us," you know, he would have went around the block and got in line behind him and been respectful. There's a trucker's etiquette that, you know, most of those guys respect each other. He wasn't trying to disrespect anybody. He just didn't know what he had done, and this guy made a big freaking deal out of it as though he'd done it on purpose. And in fairness to the people that were upset, they had no way to know that he hadn't done it on purpose. So I felt bad for him. Just an unfortunate situation, but anyway, he definitely can handle himself in situations like that a lot better than his old man would. And if you're gonna pick a fight with one of us, probably better to pick it with me than with Cole. So just a word of advice. So anyway, hopefully your week did not involve any fisticuffs or any expensive repairs, but hopefully you had a good week, and we will be back with you again next week here on Ag Talk.